I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wow, how excited am I right here, Denton Day. Big pleasure, man. We've been filling in for Grant and Danny all week on 106.7, The Fan, and having Hercules, a.k.a. The Stallion, working with me. And we've been talking about Grant Paulson all week, and now I can't believe it. GP in the flesh right here on the Sheehan Show. How fitting with the All-Star break and all these young puppies, all this new blood, GP, coming into MLB. Got to put a smile on your face as a guy that loves the game.
Oh, it's the best. Yeah, we had 32 first-time All-Stars announced yesterday, Doc.
Yep.
Which tells me a lot about the game and where it's headed. You know, players in every sport are bigger, faster, stronger, younger, but in baseball, even in a year where the prospects have mostly struggled getting called to the big leagues, you know, the young, established, veteran major leaguers are making their presence felt, and the Nats are finally getting in on the party, aren't they?
Well, this kid, I mean, watching Wood, De La Cruz to me is the most intriguing athlete. And Ohtani, yeah, he's there. But De La Cruz is something like an alien to me. And now we have one. You know, and I'm saying I love Lane Thomas, love Lane. I like our team, man. Love the way this guy try to live and die based on their success or failure. And it's been a lot of fun, but I couldn't wait. And when Denton said, we got Grant, I said, no way. He said, yeah, we do. And I go, what about for you being at the park? Because you and, you know, you guys get a chance to do your show a lot of time from the park itself, and you're there. The atmosphere that Wood and his demeanor, you've covered all sports in this town. This guy doesn't even seem like he has a social media account. I mean, he's unfazed. But how he's reading, I mean, he doesn't chase pitches. How does this guy get this smooth, this young, Grant?
It's crazy. You know, what I loved about, to go back to Juan Soto, I remember asking Mike Rizzo when he got called up and was really good right away. I said, how is he this confident and comfortable, kind of what you're talking about with James Wood? And Rizzo said at that time, you know, Soto's discipline and batter's eye was on a level for him with, I think it was the guys that he said that he'd been around, like Frank Thomas, and he named a couple other guys ever, right? And I'm not saying James Wood is that, because he's going to strike out, he's going to swing and miss, he's much bigger and longer. To your point, he's 6'7". So just naturally, when you're 6'7", for people that haven't swung a bat, you got really long arms, means you got a long swing, and there's going to be holes, and you know that pitchers are going to be able to find them, and you're naturally going to swing and miss. But what's amazing early in his career, to what you're saying, Doc, he's not expanding the strike zone very often. He's not chasing. He's spitting on pitches. And his demeanor, that unflappable, kind of emotionless, everything he does, it's almost like, and this is a positive, I'm not knocking him, it's almost like he's bored, right? He looks just so calm. He's like a duck on a pond. So to see him in his first at-bat, which was the best vibes in the ballpark in years, I mean, with every ball called, there were huge ovations. With every strike called, even if they split the plate in half, middle, you know, everyone's booing the home plate umpire. And he's working a count, and it was just such a great scene. It reminded me of a really, you know, previously good time in that ballpark, 2019 and earlier. But he's done it now consistently for a week where he's getting on base about half the time. He's been on base in every single game. He's got a hit in all but one of the seven games he's played in. He's hitting well over 300. He's starting to drive the ball. Had a home run and a double on Saturday. The home run to the opposite field was just mashed. And he's mostly just hitting rockets on the ground. I mean, Doc, his exit velocity numbers, how hard the ball comes off his bat. He'll lead the team. He already is on average. He'll be top five or so in baseball by year's end, you know, when he qualifies. It's just, you mentioned it with Ellie De La Cruz, the size at 6'6 plus, the speed. They don't make this model. They don't exist. It's just a different caliber of athlete than we're used to. And frankly, guys like him, guys like Ellie, they don't really choose baseball most of the time. They're playing other sports. So it's a gift to have them in baseball.
DD?
Grant, so throughout the first week of the James Wood experience, it felt like Davey was kind of moving him around the lineup, which is to be expected, just trying to see where he's comfortable. He really looked good in that third slot. Is your expectation that that's kind of where he's going to stay the rest of the year?
So against righties, he's locked in right now in the third spot, which I need people to understand how insane that is, getting called up at 21. The third spot is traditionally where you put your best hitter. The way that lineups are done now, oftentimes you like speed at the top for sure, but you put your on-base guy really as high as possible, a manufacturer who can swipe bags. You put someone with a little power who could drive in, run, maybe second, who gives you quality at bat. That's Lane Thomas. But your best hitter in your lineup traditionally bats third. And right now that's James Wood against right-handers. Now against lefties, Denton, they started him sixth in the order. He's already moved up to five because what they realized was he's having better at-bats than the guys in front of him. And there were too many times where he was on deck in a big spot or somebody else higher in the order with traffic on the bases was getting those chances. I think what you're eventually going to see is that maybe they have him bat fourth, you know, pretty soon against lefties, and eventually maybe third because he's been successful left on left. That's where most of his plate appearances has come. Think about this, guys. Teams are already going to the bullpen to match up against him. Like the other day, there was a decision made by the Mets where they opted essentially to keep a lefty in against Lane Thomas, who rakes against lefties, who's the back-to-back Nationals Player of the Year the last two seasons, so that they could have a left-on-left matchup with James Wood. Like, they're prioritizing him over the veterans, over the all-star that just got chosen, C.J. Abrams, in terms of matchups. So it tells you everything you need to know. But I think you're already going to see right now that he's going to hit, you know, fourth or fifth against lefties, and batting third against righties is here to stay. That's not changing.
He probably spent as little time in left field as he has spent in any of the outfields. And with center and right really on lockdown here, it seems like he'll make the adjustment. Had a ball in front of him that drew a lot of error, and rightfully so, to where he seemed to be a little hesitant. But I think he'll adapt. What's your gut tell you about him playing left field?
Yeah, so it's new to him. To your point, he just didn't do it a lot in the minor leagues. The very end of his time in the minors, when it looked like they were going to call him up and they had Jacob Young playing elite defensive center field and Lane Thomas rolling in right, it became clear he was going to have to play left. The plan, I was told earlier in the year by somebody with the team, was that when he got called up, he'd probably play center. And by the way, he can play center at an above average level. He can run. He's a plus-plus runner. And I think he'll be a tremendous defensive player ultimately. But if you've seen him early on, and what you're saying from yesterday, Doc, he has really struggled in left field. I think it's two things. I think it's, number one, he's learning a new position. And number two, he's learning a new ballpark. You know, when you first play in a big league park, and this sounds like an excuse, and it is. It's an explanation more than anything else. But it's that third rung. You've now got fans in the stands and the extra amount of seats to contend with. You got the lights. At Nats Park as well. So to learn a new spot in a new ballpark is not necessarily easy. I've been a little bit surprised, frankly, with how timid he's looked, how uncomfortable he's looked in left field, just because he's such a naturally brilliant athlete. I would have thought he took a little more quickly to the position. But I think more than anything else, he's just been timid. He's kind of thinking a lot. Like yesterday, the ball that fell in for the double that led to a run and eventually two runs in an inning, you know, he's got to just decide right off his ball. And it seemed like he was passive and hoping that third baseman Trey Lipscomb, shortstop C.J. Abrams got there. But that's his ball off the bat. So I'm not worried about his defense. His defense is going to be very, very good. In the short term, though, right now, he's obviously as comfortable as he is at the plate. And as much as he looks like a veteran, you know, he does look like a guy who's kind of getting his feet wet and figuring it out in left field.
Well, there's one first ball stolen base attempt. He got nabbed. He made it. He got pulled off the bag. And there's so much of him. I mean, because the dude is so long and athletic, but he's not afraid to do it. I like everything about him. We just got to wait it out. And I think there'll be even more to come. In terms of the rest of the All-Star selections. Was there anything else that stood out to you other than Skeens being picked as a rookie flamethrower with the Pirates?
Getting in after just 10 starts was amazing, but it was the correct decision. Especially, Doc, like you and I were on air talking about All-Star games when they mattered, right? When they, the winner of the game, and I thought this was dumb, but for many, many years, the winner of the game dictated home field advantage in the World Series.
Yep.
And so when it was, when that was what the All-Star game was, then you got to build the rosters in a certain way. You got to take everything seriously. Right now, it's a showcase and an exhibition for fans. So yep. Paul Skeens should be there. I mean, he is the biggest pitching story in the sport this year. He's the most hyped, best prospect really ever. He's on the level of Strasburg, the difference being, you know, Strasburg came along, stunningly to say, about 15 years ago. Now with social media and how much everyone's living online and the amount of access to the minor leagues and college sports, you know, Skeens is just on another level in terms of stardom. I mean, you look at the number of times he pitched on national TV at LSU versus what Stras did, it's night and day. So there's no reason they wouldn't have had him in the All-Star game, not to mention he's deserving. I mean, the only reason he wouldn't have made it is because the Pirates wouldn't let him pitch in the big leagues while he was mowing people down in AAA. He hasn't really ever struggled still in 10 starts. He's got an ERA barely over 2. I would start him in the game. Like, I'd go all in and just say, this is what's best for baseball. Let's get him in the starting lineup. Let's have him pitch the first inning against the 1-2-3 of the American Leaguers blowing 102. And let's let people see what they came to see. So that was the big story yesterday nationally. I think locally the fact that C.J. Abrams made the team was awesome. This was not because a national needed to go. He well-deserved, probably been the best shortstop in the National League, if, you know, offensively, other than Mookie Betts this year, who's hurt. So for him to get the nod and go to the game, I thought second time in as many years that one of the guys they've traded for in this rebuild will represent the team. I think it's a really cool thing for the Nationals.
DD?
Should Jake Irvin have been named an All-Star 2, Grant, or should it just have been Abrams?
I think Irvin deserved to go. I understand when you're sub-500 in a rebuild, it's hard to get two. But there are some teams, like you look at the San Francisco Giants as an example, they got two All-Stars, and one of them is a pitcher that hasn't had as good a year as Abrams, as Irvin, and Logan Webb. Logan Webb's got a worse everything, ERA, WHIP, average against, I mean, across the board, and he got in over Jake Irvin. Now, he's a household name, who's been an opening day starter and been around for a few years, and it is a bit of a popularity contest. But Jake Irvin has been, you can make the case, a top five starting pitcher in a lot of metrics in the National League, top 10 unequivocally, and didn't get in. I can name two guys, including Webb and then Shota Imanaga from the Cubs, who have worse numbers than him. So normally, the thing is, when you're on a team like the Nats, you go, oh, well, this guy deserved to be there. Like Kyle Finnegan's a good example. Kyle Finnegan's got a 2.17 ERA in almost 40 games. He's blown only a couple of saves. He's been a little more mediocre lately, but has had a dominant season. You could go, ah, it'd be nice if he was an All-Star. He's had an All-Star caliber season. But maybe he's not better than the guys that made it. In the case of Jake Irvin, not only does he deserve to be there, he's categorically, take the names off of the ballots, been decidedly better than two of the starting pitchers that made the team. So, yeah, it should have been Abrams and Irvin, which would have been a really big deal for a guy. By the way, as much as we're talking about super prospects here with James Wood and Abrams, who was a top five pick, Jake Irvin kind of came from obscurity last year, fellas. He was not even in the top 15 in the system when he graduated. Nobody really knew much about Jake Irvin. And next thing you know, he kind of settled in. He had a decent year. And this year, he's been borderline dominant. After 4th of July, 7-inning, one-hit ball, that was one of the best starts we've seen at Nats Park by anybody not named Scherzer or Strasburg.
So, Grant, with the trade deadline coming up, I saw you did a Q&A on Instagram yesterday, and you said a guy like Jesse Winker could be on the move if a team calls and has the right price for it. And we've had this conversation about buying or selling at the deadline because they've been flirting the team as with potentially getting into the wild card. Assuming that they end up selling at the deadline, what exactly are they selling for, knowing that they have so many guys that are likely going to be coming up at the end of the year?
So you're just generally, when you're selling, you're not trying to fill positions or seeking a spot per se. They have needs and they know them. They do not really have a clear first baseman of the future in the pipeline. 40th overall pick out of Miami. Another big kid you'll like, Doc, 6'5", Yoandy Morales. His father played for the Cuban national team at one point. There's a chance he turns out to be that guy, but you know, he is a little further away at this point. They don't necessarily have, I don't think, enough still starting pitching as much as the young guys are coming on in terms of frontline elite stuff. So maybe you have to spend or trade for that. But I think at this deadline, you're just trying to flood the system. You're just trying to add as much talent. What they've been doing, create competition. What happens when you start adding guys is dudes start looking over their shoulders going, oh, wait a second, I'm not the second best guy in the system anymore. I'm fit. Now I got to grind. Now I got to get in the gym. Now I got to get better. Now I got to work on my changeup. And you've kind of seen it with Mitchell Parker in the organization come out of nowhere and improve. Jake Irvin, same thing. They're starting to churn out lower draft picks like Jacob Young, who was a seventh rounder, who's been one of the best defensive outfielders in the sport this season. So I think they move Winker and you try to get a couple of prospects back. I think they could do something similar to what they did with Jamer Candelario last year. I actually think they... infielder Kevin Mate, who's probably not a long-term big league everyday player, and DJ Hurd, who's in their rotation right now, who's had two masterful starts, and whether it's in the rotation or the bullpen, is going to be a long-term member of the club. So that's the kind of deal I'd be looking for Winker. You know, depending on how things go in the couple weeks before the deadline, fellas, I think there's a real chance that if they don't win some games and they don't get closer to 500, you know, maybe they do a more extreme sell-off and they move one of their relievers. Finnegan would have immense value. They could do really well in a return for him. Harvey's value has certainly dropped, but I think it gives a decent minor league player for a guy that throws 100 and can pitch in the eighth inning in a contending bullpen. So they've got options. They've got players they can move. The big questions to me are Finnegan and Lane Thomas. Are those players who have proven themselves as worthy of being around when you're good again, that are controlled? Are those guys that you think are going to be here in 3-4 years that you're going to extend? Or do you move them now maybe at peak value in some capacity and just try to get a nice haul back that better lines up with, you know, when you are going to be contending for postseason?
I like the sound of it. I know Luis Garcia Jr. is still visible when the smoke settles, man. I just love the dude's game and love how he has evolved and defensively in the whole nine yards. Dude, we could do this forever, but we don't have enough to pay you. So we're going to have to free you up. GP, man, love you, man. Keep doing what you're doing, man. We're big fans.
I appreciate you guys. It's nice to be talking about the Nats and the present, right? Not 3 years from now and getting out to the ballpark and seeing the kids. It's been fun.
Yeah, that's good. Keep it up, man. Grant Paulson, part of G&D on 106.7 The Fan. Love talking baseball, man. And with purpose. And we're not blowing this thing out of proportion, taking it step by step. It's just good to be not in depression mode and talking 3 years out. Who knows? Pitching, hitting, keeps going on. We might be able to bite off a little bit of the apple this season. To break, we go here on the Sheehan Show. DOC, DHing, Denton Day, the man, controlling everything electrically. We'll be back.
I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Denton Day, a worldly creature, a man that on the weekends, because you were a slave and you were working. But I know that you're a man that's pretty familiar around the tennis courts.
I'm getting there. You know, I'm an infant in my tennis fandom. But people say,
but
you know,
you're making the commitment. Okay.
I'm a man of the people. People said, Denton, you need to talk more tennis with Kevin. Or they said, Kevin, talk more tennis. So naturally, I was like, you know what? I'll pay attention to more of the tennis. We had a couple fun ones yesterday. I mean, Carlos Alcaraz, he is so much fun to watch.
I love watching him.
I mean, he's
man.
Become must-watch television.
Tiafo, I watched that match in its entirety. Yesterday, I just got so caught up in Shark Week and soccer. So it became a point that something had to give. And I got wrapped up in Shark Week. So And I kind of had the hunch that you would cover the tennis, and I'd cover the pickleball, so I think we were there. So what's your tennis update?
Well, so we got a game in action now on the men's side. Alexander Zverev is taking on, he's a fourth-ranked player in the world. He's taking on the 13th-ranked Taylor Fritz, an American. He took the first set, Zverev did 6-4, but they're going at it in this second set, Doc. It's on right now, and Fritz has the advantage to potentially go up 6-5 in the second set. This one's been fun so far. It felt like even though yesterday had Carlos Alcaraz, had Yannick Skinner, I mean, Yannick Skinner unfortunately made very easy work of Ben Shelton. I was not happy about it. I had Ben Shelton not winning the match.
Oh,
I just had him winning a set. And he was up 4-1 in the final set, and then he lost it in a tiebreak. I was not thrilled about that one. But you have an opportunity to get all of the four best, Djokovic, Zverev, Sinner, Alcaraz, potentially all landing in the semis together, which would be... Yeah. I mean, that would be a dream come true for the sport of tennis to have that big, the amount of big names of those four guys in the semis. Because if you look at the women's side, it's depleted. Number one seeds out. Coco Gauff lost yesterday. She was the biggest star in the American side
she
of things.
Disoriented.
It was. I was stunned watching it. Because I thought she was in the driver's seat. After Iga Swiatek lost, I'm thinking, all right, Coco Gauff's in the driver's seat. She can bring this home for America, get her first Wimbledon title, and then she loses in the fashion that she did. I was bummed.
Yeah. Surprising. But it happens. I mean, you know, she's looking up to the stands like, hey, coach, help me. What do you see? What can I do? I'm like, yo, what? She lost her feel for it. And, but it can, you know, it can happen. It can happen. That was crazy.
It's been fun, though. Like, I enjoy watching it. I enjoy that it's on early for us. I know when overseas it's on like a regular time, but for us it's early. So being able to get up, especially on the weekend, and pop a little bit of tennis on, that's a pretty good life.
Yeah, it is, and I do like it. The level of skill that's involved. I like switching surfaces. I'm starting to understand that now, you know, and the grass and the clay, and just like horse racing, everything different. No different than our U.S. football, you know, AstroTurf and natural grass surfaces, indoors, outdoors. Everything kind of makes a difference. Adds a little bit to it. And the shots that are made are just amazing to me. The degree of difficulty, the athleticism in it. In tennis, you know, when you're young and you're ignorant, you don't realize it. You don't realize how much skill is involved in playing the game of tennis. A lot of skill, athleticism, power, great, everything, you know, involved in it. So, and probably one of those sports where, you know, the men and women, you cut it right down the middle in terms of I enjoy seeing men and women play on about as close a level as any sport that I can think of. And I can't say that about every, and you shouldn't have to say it about every sport. But clearly, to me, is about the closest that I sense a competitive draw where I go, yeah, I see that and I go, yeah, it's as close to the same as it kind of, than it gets. Because even the most staunch proponent of basketball, there's a big difference in hoops. Obviously, softball and baseball, big difference. There's no contest in football. But in tennis, hey, man, it's closer. The gap is probably as close as it is. I may be missing a sport, but to me, now, outside of, I am missing the number one, swimming. Swimming's probably as close to. But fun. I do like that. I didn't know that you could play. You could put money. Is there any sport that you don't wager on?
No. I was trying to think. I was like, what have I? I've wagered on some pretty out of left field ones before. I was on a big losing streak. Big losing streak, and I need to get out of a funk. So I bet on a badminton game.
Badminton in so long. Badminton used to be the thing.
I didn't know you could gamble on badminton. So I bet on badminton. The guy that I bet on, I don't know who his name is, but he was like minus 200. He was big favorite. I live bet. It was big favorite. I was like, just get me a win. He blew it. He lost. I lost 18 in a row, and I put the app down for 2 weeks. I was like, I need to cleanse.
Yeah, that's the thing about it. When you go on a losing streak and you put money into it, that's real, because you're putting your money where your mouth is. You know, a large majority of people on, you know, our formats don't lose a nickel because they don't put anything up. As loud as they scream and holler about things, they have no skin in the game. And so when you're actually a player, and if you want something funny, how about this? The person that types for Big Tony, because he can't. Oh, he might voice text it. Somebody who's voice texting for him said, did I ever tell you I was a world-class tennis player? When you think of being world class at anything, what do you think Big Tony is world class at?
He's a world class trash talker.
Yeah, okay, trash talker. I'll give you that. But it's not playing tennis. I'd love to see him in a tennis outfit. Now, that would be worth the price of admission. Seeing him in all white with a racket in his hands, that would be hilarious. And the idea of him being able to serve would be impossible. He would not be able to serve and get a ball to go over a net in play. I'd bet anything on that. Impossible for him to do that. Not easy for anybody to do that. At all. How long did you play tennis competitively?
You talking to me?
Yeah, I thought you were a competitive tennis player.
Oh, dear God, no. I did tennis in, like, when we had to do it in PE in middle school and high school, and it became a home run derby. Sheen.
I thought one of you two was competitive.
No, I was a track runner.
Okay. All right. No, I'm glad we're talking about it. Hey, man, when's the last time you had tennis talk? I mean, it's on sports radio. That's good. I mean, without Mac. And where would it even have been without Mac? Man, Mac brought in a ton of rebels. A ton of people that necessarily might not have been invited to the club. When Mac was doing his thing, man, Mac was a huge, huge, huge player. I also thought that I was a little surprised that you didn't carve out a little moment for John Cena today. I thought
that was going to come in my daily news. I was nearly on the verge of tears this weekend.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll back off that then. I don't want to steal your thunder, but I was kind of surprised. I thought I know you're a man of the square circle ropes. I thought, okay, well, that'll be good. Now, Bronny and the summer league and the bad knee. Good thing his knee swole up, or bad?
With Bronny,
yeah,
sorry,
with
say
his
that
knee.
Again.
I think it's a good thing. Bronny's knee, he had a little swole. I think it's a great thing to happen.
Give him a little bit of time.
Yeah. I think the more time, the better. It's going to be managed and observed every step, everything he does, and just the way it's going to be. And this is what Papa Bear wanted. I wonder what Papa Bear will never admit it, but I wonder privately if he could take it back and make it go away and have him in the league, but somewhere else, would he opt out? What do you think?
I think that opt-out stuff was just a ploy. I think that was just Rich Paul attempting to twist somebody's arm.
But how, you know one thing I give Rich Paul credit for? When he put the word out that the smoothest thing they did was say, hey, look, don't nobody draft him because he's going to go somewhere. That was like somebody was going to draft him. That made you think, if you not weren't paying attention, that was brilliant to me. Do you think they needed to tell somebody not to draft him? Do you think anybody was going to select him before they did? They being the Beverly Hillbillies, the Lakers.
More likely than not, no. Because if they did, they would have already done it.
Yeah, who was going to take him? Not that he can't play and not going to be a good prospect, but who would have wanted what comes along with it? Do you want that? I mean, nobody needs publicity in the NBA. But why would you have done it unless you thought he could help you? You know what's coming with it. I just thought it was interesting. I really thought it was interesting. And we have no idea how it'll come out. This may be a jackpot. This kid may come in later. Who knows? But I do think it's it is crazy. And what was your and finally, from my standpoint to you, about what was your soccer moment? Or did you have one?
I haven't really had one yet. I think I'm going to start gambling tomorrow on the soccer. So I'll have a bet for you tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah, I just, all that effort, all that time, and it comes down to the penalty, to the kicks at the end, which is, it just, the drama, the pressure, one-on-one, it's just amazing to me that with all the cheering and dancing and oopla for the hour and a half plus the time, and it comes down to one-on-one with these kicks and potential stops and the approach to the ball. And I love it now that they're stopping and going. And I don't know if I ever saw, were they doing that 5 years ago? I don't remember seeing that. It seems like a recent wrinkle. I could be wrong on that one, but I do like it. I really do. I like it a lot. So, you know, you usually have that trick in your bag. You call it the daily news, and I'm a huge fan of that. Will we get that today, or you just save that for Chin?
No, you're getting it next.
Oh, we are. Oh, great. All right. Hey, folks, don't move. You're going to love this. This is Denton's Daily News.
Hitting the news you might have missed. It's Denton's Daily News.
All right, Doc, we got a lot to get into on the Daily News. I want to touch on a little bit of the baseball stuff. We got to give some flowers to Angel Reese for another double-double, but I was sitting on my couch Saturday night. You know, big fan of the pro wrestling on this side of the microphone. I know you're a fan of it as well. So I was watching a little bit of pro wrestling, and John Cena pops up on my screen. I got hyped. Loved John Cena growing up. Big John Cena fan now that he's transitioned into Hollywood. And then that excitement and that joy immediately took a 180 when John Cena told me that he is going to be retiring soon. That made me feel incredibly old because I've been watching John Cena for like 20 years, and he is associated with my childhood. is John Cena. And now his career is coming to an end in the world of professional wrestling. 2025 going to be his last year. I thought he was saying that he was retiring at WrestleMania. He instead said he's going to go the entire year of 2025, but it will be his last WrestleMania. Nonetheless, though, John Cena's career coming to an end feels like the end of a very, very big, important chapter in the world of pro wrestling.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I love it when you put that year ahead of it. Smart. That just increases the fact that you're not going to miss him. You know, you go, why did he do it? Smart.
Must-see TV now.
Must-see. Now you document that. That now goes, well, honey, we got to go because he won't. This is it for him. You know, who was the last one in the NBA that did it the best? Was it Kareem with the rocking chairs and everywhere he went?
Kobe had the year. Kobe and Dirk and D-Wade had one too, but Kobe's was the big one.
Yeah, okay. So, I thought Jabbar started it off.
He might have started, but Kobe was the last one to do it.
Yeah, okay. But I think that really means you're a rock star. I mean, when you take it to that level, it's pretty big. And you know what can happen, too? He can always come back from that. Didn't Hulk do this and come back?
Oh, God. Hulk did it. Ric Flair did it. Unfortunately, Shawn Michaels did it.
Yeah, I mean, come on, man. The sport is... It's it's so big now, man, and it really is the and with the you know, tribal warriors, and you got to give it to them, man. It's from where I, you know, grew up, and my mom had me watching Freddie Blassie, Mil Máscaras, and Bobo Brazil, and those people on the black and white, Emerson, to where it is now, it's global. You know, it's not just a USA thing. It's wrestlers all over the world.
Oh, yeah, they were in Canada on Saturday for the event where he announced his retirement.
Yeah. Wow. So it's not, I mean, that it just shows you. There's something about it, the combative nature that we just love about being in that arena, man, and going after it. It's why football is number one. Even with the rule changes, as much as they've softened the game up, still hadn't heard it. When I look at the films, and one thing that I can't do with this show and not mention the V Foundation, and every year at this time, and I hope as long as I'm breathing that I'll be sensitive to Dick Vitale, who's fighting right now and just had another victory, another successful surgery. But when you look at the V Foundation, why was, you know, Valvano and then Stewart Scott cooling the other side of the pillow, is just one of those things that I think they'll be referencing that 50 years from now. Because we'll keep it alive. We'll keep saying it so the young people understand what impact he had on sports and how we relate to sports and how the crossover, because he made it cool. He brought over street cred and made it mainstream in a way that was acceptable. And that wasn't easy to do, man. I remember the period very, very well and being in the midst of it. And it wasn't easy to do. Seeing that and not knowing that he was ill or whatever, but every year we do this because of the ESPYs. And have you been to an ESPYs?
I have not. I used to love the ESPYs when I was a kid. I didn't know they were still happening in 2024.
Yeah, it's still happening. And if I'm not mistaken, it's Thursday night. I could be wrong. but it's the V Foundation, the speeches, Stewart's speech, Jim's speech. They're like annual. There's something that I never ever gets old. It's a, you get to rededicate yourself to that purpose and understanding A, how precious life is, how short life is. And both of these dynamic individuals were girl dads. And now that these young women reflect on their dads, and the way ESPN does a great job with the reflection on this, you know, as much as we tear apart, and obviously sometimes justifiably, there's some good things. This is something good. And the V Foundation, all the money. And they say, and I'm sure it does, and I hope it does, but everybody kind of, a lot of people say that, but I believe them. Hopefully that for the cancer research and things that you can hope to make a difference. But it is reflective every year just to be thankful. And, you know, in our worlds, it all happens differently. We, you know, I lost Coach Butch McAdams just a couple weeks ago, just recently on the show. Then the tragedy in, you know, Prince George's County, we just lost three of our very own in Prince George's County and University of Maryland and Minnesota Vikings. And, you know, these things happen right before us. And it happened all over the country, all over the world. But when it hits home and in the sporting sphere, then we know we are, I'm sensitive to it because it doesn't affect you personally. The community is affected by it. And I think it's only fitting to acknowledge that and these charities and what these things all mean, that what we do and the impact. And just talking about games. But when it does get serious and does it matter to people, and maybe for me, the Lou Gehrig deal in that speech is probably one of the most chilling things that made me focus, was watching that. And it always does remind me, it's kind of like it resets me in seeing our quote heroes who fall and that are vulnerable to disease or things aren't always perfect for you just because you're a ball player. You're just like anybody else. And you have real issues and real problems. So I and I'm sure everybody does it. They do it in their own way. But I just thought there's no way in the hell I can be on the air and not mention it and give it its due. We did get to go cover a couple of ESPYs back in the day. I think we were 570 back at the time when we did it, or 981 or two. But going up to New York and doing that was really cool. And you see that it has become one of the majors. You know, it's a bit, and you've not been to one, but I'm sure get Kevin to give you his tickets one year. Denton, you're too strong at this. You've got to be able to put that under your.
I don't know. You think he'd give me up his ESPY tickets? I don't know if he would. He might love going to the event.
No, he gets, you know, he doesn't really like crowds or people, really. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, if he could make all his action on the computer, he'd probably do that. But he does like kids, though, if he can coach them. That's why he's a good coach, because he loves coaching kids. I'm not sure he'd be good with adults. Yeah, that would be questionable. We will see. But just keep that in mind. I don't know if you've never been to one, so until you go to one, but just promise me you'll put that on your bucket list. And if you do that, then I'll back off.
I can definitely put it on the bucket list.
Okay, do that. Do it. And then Day at an ESPYs would be good. Treats for you. I can't believe it. Grant Paulson at 11. Are you serious? Has his people called up to say he can't do it yet, or is he really going to still do it? Ben Standing? He's in.
He's in.
11. Okay, well, let's buy some time. Pay a few bills. When we come back, the one and only Ben Standing right here on the Sheehan Show. DOC and the elusive.
I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hitting the news you might have missed, it's Denton's Daily News.
All right, Doc, we got a lot to get into on the Daily News. I want to touch on a little bit of the baseball stuff. We got to give some flowers to Angel Reese for another double-double. But I was sitting on my couch Saturday night. You know, big fan of the pro wrestling on this side of the microphone. I know you're a fan of it as well. So I was watching a little bit of pro wrestling, and John Cena pops up on my screen. I got hyped. Loved John Cena growing up. Big John Cena fan now that he's transitioned into Hollywood. And then that excitement and that joy immediately took a 180 when John Cena told me that he is going to be retiring soon. That made me feel incredibly old because I've been watching John Cena for like 20 years. And he is associated with my childhood is John Cena. And now his career is coming to an end in the world of professional wrestling. 2025 going to be his last year. I thought he was saying that he was retiring at WrestleMania. He instead said he's going to go the entire year of 2025, but it will be his last WrestleMania. Nonetheless, though, John Cena's career coming to an end feels like the end of a very, very big, important chapter in the world of pro wrestling.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I love it when you put that year ahead of it. Smart. That just increases the fact that you're not going to miss him. You know, you go, why did he do it? Smart.
Must-see TV now.
Must-see. Now you document that. That now goes, well, honey, we got to go because he won't, this is it for him. You know, who was the last one in the NBA that did it the best? Was it Kareem with the rocking chairs and everywhere he went?
Kobe had the year. Kobe and I think Dirk and D-Wade had one too, but Kobe's was the big one.
Yeah, okay. So but I thought Jabbar started it off.
He might have started, but Kobe was the last one to do it.
Yeah, okay. But I think that really means you're a rock star. I mean, when you take it to that level, it's pretty big. And you know what can happen too? He can always come back from that. Didn't Hulk do this and come back?
Oh, God. Hulk did it. Ric Flair did it. Unfortunately, yeah, I mean, Shawn Michaels did it.
Yeah, I mean, come on, man. The sport is, it's, it's so big now, man. And it really is the, and with the, you know, tribal warriors, and you got to give it to them, man. It's, from where I, you know, grew up, my mom had me watching Freddie Blassie, Mil Máscaras, and Bobo Brazil, and those people on the black and white, Emerson, to where it is now. It's global. You know, it's not just a USA thing. It's wrestlers all over the world.
Oh, yeah. They were in Canada on Saturday for the event where he announced his retirement.
Yeah. Wow. So it's not, I mean, that it just shows you. There's something about it, the combative nature that we just love about being in that arena, man, and going after it. It's why football is number one, even with the rule changes. As much as they've softened the game up, still hadn't heard it. When I look at the films, and one thing that I can't do with this show and not mention the V Foundation, and every year at this time, and I hope as long as I'm breathing, that I'll be sensitive to Dick Vitale, who's fighting right now and just had another victory, another successful surgery. But when you look at the V Foundation, why it was, you know, Valvano and then Stewart, Scott, cooling the other side of the pillow, is just one of those things that I think they'll be referencing that 50 years from now. Because we'll keep it alive. We'll keep saying it so the young people understand what impact he had on sports and how we relate to sports and how the crossover, because he made it cool. He brought over street cred and made it mainstream in a way that was acceptable. And that wasn't easy to do, man. I remember the period very, very well and being in the midst of it, and it wasn't easy to do. Seeing that and not knowing that he was ill or whatever, but every year we do this because of the ESPYs. And have you been to an ESPYs?
I have not. I used to love the ESPYs when I was a kid. I didn't know they were still happening in 2024.
Yeah, it's still happening. And if I'm not mistaken, it's Thursday night. I could be wrong. But it's the V Foundation, the speeches, Stewart's speech, Jim's speech. They're like annual. There's something that I never, ever gets old. You get to rededicate yourself to that purpose and understanding, A, how precious life is, how short life is. And both of these dynamic individuals were girl dads. And now that these young women reflect on their dads and the way ESPN does a great job with the reflection on this, you know, as much as we tear apart, and obviously sometimes justifiably, there's some good things. This is something good. And the V Foundation, all the money, and they say, and I'm sure it does, and I hope it does, but everybody kind of, a lot of people say that, but I believe them. Hopefully that for the cancer research and things that you can hope to make a difference. But it is reflective every year just to be thankful. And, you know, in our worlds, it all happens differently. We, you know, I lost Coach Butch McAdams just a couple weeks ago, just recently on the show. Then the tragedy of, you know, Prince George's County. We just lost three of our very own in Prince George's County and University of Maryland and Minnesota Vikings, and, you know, these things happen right before us, and it happened all over the country, all over the world, but when it hits home and in the sporting sphere, then we know I'm sensitive to it because it doesn't affect you personally. The community is affected by it, and I think it's only fitting to acknowledge that. And these charities and what these things all mean, that what we do and the impact. And just talking about games. But when it does get serious, and does it matter to people, and maybe for me, the Lou Gehrig deal and that speech is probably one of the most chilling things that made me focus, was watching that. And it always does remind me, it's kind of like it resets me. And seeing our, quote, heroes who fall and that are vulnerable to disease or things aren't always perfect for you just because you're a ball player. You're just like anybody else. And you have real issues and real problems. So I I'm sure everybody does it. They do it in their own way. But I just thought there's no way in the hell I can be on the air and not mention it. and give it its due. We did get to go cover a couple of ESPYs back in the day. I think we were not 570 back at the time when we did it, or 981 or two. But going up to New York and doing that was really cool. And you see that it has become one of the majors. You know, it's a bit, and you've not been to one, but I'm sure get Kevin to give you his tickets one year. Denton, you're too strong at this. You've got to be able to put that under your.
I don't know. You think he'd give me up his ESPY tickets? I don't know if he would. He might love going to the event.
No, he doesn't really like crowds or people, really. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, if he could make all his action on computer, he'd probably do that. But he does like kids, though, if he can coach them. That's why he's a good coach, because he loves coaching kids. I'm not sure he'd be good with adults. Yeah, that would be questionable. We will see. But just keep that in mind. I don't know but you've never been to one, so until you go to one, but just promise me you'll put that on your bucket list. And if you do that, then I'll back off.
I can definitely put it on the bucket list.
Okay, do that. I know Denton Day at an ESPYs would be good. Treats for you. I can't believe it. Grant Paulson at 11. Are you serious? Has his people called up to say he can't do it yet, or is he really going to still do it? Ben Standing? He's in. 11? Okay, well, let's buy some time. Pay a few bills. When we come back, the one and only Ben Standing right here on the Sheehan Show. DOC and the elusive.
I'm John Oran, Pucks sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.